Your host, so excited to be with you and to bring goodness into your life in so many ways as we've been doing each week. And what a treat this week. There's so much struggle, so much chaos, so much pain and suffering in the world. And closer to home for many of us, unresolved personal issues interfering with some of the caring and the love that we know is within us. And so many of us yearn to open up our hearts to more love for ourselves and for those around us. And one of the great, great gifts is to have someone that has devoted the majority of their life to finding the tools, finding the techniques, finding the pathways that will help us to connect with that beautiful love within us. And today our guest, Dr. Robert McDonald, is one of those exceptional human beings whose intention, he speaks of healing the heart of the world, which is big, but doing it one heart at a time. And who knows out there among our listeners if today is the day we're opening a door for your heart to receive some healing love. And we wonder, Dr. McDonald is not yet a household name, but when you learn more about him, oh, get ready for a treat. He's an author, an international seminar leader, and is the creator of the Destination Method, which offers a pathway to personal transformation at the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual levels of consciousness. And, of course, you can visit. We'll be giving his website out momentarily to get more information. Now, within this Destination Method, Dr. McDonald created many models. He does a wonderful job of naming the pathway to purpose, seven levels of awareness, virtues and shadow, the evolution of genius, evolution of self, the seven levels of creation, the developmental model. Wonderful elements that basically open the pathway for tremendous healing within ourselves. Some of his background, before he created this method, Dr. McDonald was a master trainer and early developer of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. If you haven't heard of that, oh, go do some research into that. An amazing method that he's very skilled at and has taken that background. So he is a pioneer in the field of addictions, codependence, and spirituality. He wrote the book Tools of the Spirit, Pathways to the Realization of Universal Innocence, back in 97. And he's also co-author of a best-selling book, NLP, The New Technology of Achievement. number of other books, co-author of two Nightingale Conant audio CD albums, NLP, The New Technology of Achievement, and Success Mastery with NLP. Well, in addition, Dr. McDonald created the Releasing Emotional Enmeshment Process. The word codependence is hugely known, or narcissistic personality disorder, dealing with things where we're not standing as a strong individual, but we're stuck with each other and we're leaning on each other in unhealthy ways. Well, this enmeshment process is the only NLP procedure specifically designed to quickly and effectively resolve addictions and codependence. That is featured in a number of books. And since early childhood, Dr. McDonald has been fascinated with the nature and the structure of deeply meaningful personal change. Talk about that innate curious child that developed it using his mind and his heart to tools that are transforming beyond anything that you may have experienced. So get ready. Now, he's been into this for a long, long time. Personal change as well as to how and why people express themselves. And after resolving his own grief over his father's suicide, and while earning a Master of Science degree in counseling and mental health, Dr. McDonald wrote a manual for psychotherapists that prescribes specific methods to effectively resolve the grief felt by survivors of suicide, which is about as intense a kind of a grief as you could have. And so, you know, if it's going to work on that, guess what else? And who among us doesn't have some sadness of something where we're touched, something triggers and we cry a little bit? Well, guess what? That's unresolved grief. Well, today, he's earned a Doctor of Divinity degree from the Emerson Theological Institute, enhancing his spiritual nature and bringing that forward into his work, and he continues his commitment to the practical application of transformational aspects of psychology, language, spirituality, and, get this, singing. We got to figure out how all that intertwines. So as a professional lecturer on interpersonal communication and mental health skills, for over 35 years, he has taught thousands upon thousands of people from all walks of life across the USA and 18 countries around the world. So we want to get ready for some fun and some interesting pathways to our growth as we welcome Dr. Robert McDonald. Hello.
Hi, Kenneth. How are you?
Oh, I am just feeling superb.
What a great day it is.
Yes, and you, sir?
Oh, I'm feeling fabulous. I'm really appreciative of being here talking with you on Advanced Living Radio. That's really great, and thank you so much for honoring me and getting in touch with me so we can do this work.
Yes, to get important information out. I mean, there's tons upon tons of books out there on self-help.
Yeah.
And they offer advice. And what I'm finding is that there are some places that haven't reached the prominence that they deserve, but because they are giving us practical ways, it's like giving someone the ingredients to a recipe and then expecting them to cook fine gourmet foods when you haven't given them all the procedures of what goes first and second and what do you do with it and
yeah.
When is it mixed and baked or however you do it. And so much self-help just says, hey, just get a better attitude or let it go or feel better or be positive. Now, would you go ahead, Dr. McDonald, because you've the founder of this destination method, or what you call TDM,
mm-hmm.
And would you tell us some key things about yourself and this about TDM so we get a little bit more insight?
Well, sure. I'm glad you asked. Yeah, the destination method is something that I created some years ago as a consequence of wanting to integrate the insight part of work. Like you mentioned a moment ago, a lot of self-help books are great on insight, providing information that says, listen, it's a good idea for you to be happy. It's a good idea for you to let go of grief. It's a good idea for you to heal the wounds of the heart. And it's a good idea to find out why you may be having those experiences. And many self-help books have this. In fact, as far as I can tell, the vast majority of them do. And they're good advice and good for us to look at with regard to insight. what I understand is that insight is not enough. Insight just does not produce predictable results. So that I call insight, I have a symbol for that, the heart. The heart, for me, is a symbol of insight. It's a symbol of love, of compassion, of understanding, of communication, of connection. The heart is a symbol of the feminine, if we want to go to kind of a Jungian perspective. So the heart is this symbol representing, for example, compassion and insight. Well, if we have all the insight in the world while we're talking to somebody who has a broken leg, the insight and the compassion that we have and the actual concern that we have for this person who has a broken leg will not heal the broken leg. It won't help the person to heal the broken leg faster. In fact, the person will just be there with a broken leg, and maybe it'll kind of heal up by itself, but not properly, and the person will have a limp for the rest of their life. Well, what's needed is not simply the heart, but what I call another symbol, the sword. The sword is a symbol of technology for me. It's technical methodology. And when I developed the destination method, I said we need to have both the heart of compassion and insight and the sword of technology and methodology that produces results. We have, for example, a sword, a literal sword, could be used to cut fruit from a tree and bring that fruit down and feed ourselves and our neighbors. And we need this kind of technology. The only problem with having a sword or technology is that it has no heart in and of itself. So we could use a sword to harm our neighbors just as easily as help them or protect them. So the sword doesn't have any heart. It is a powerful tool or technology. What the sword needs is balance by having the heart. Or we could say that the masculine and the feminine need to come together. So what I realized was that I had a great deal of training in my undergraduate and graduate work with regard to having a lot of compassion and understanding of people suffering. But in universities that I went to, I had almost zero training in technologies of how to help people actually resolve their suffering. And I decided that I needed that. And I spent many, many years, the last 37 years or so, I've spent collecting the kinds of tools that really do work. So when we combine the heart of compassion and the sword of technology, when we integrate them, something new is born, something that's neither simply the heart nor the sword, but an integration, something new, a new level emerges. And that's what I call the destination method, because it helps people to get exactly to their destination. However, it does that with meaning and purpose. Notice that the heart provides meaning and purpose. The sword has no meaning and no purpose. It's just a tool that gets results. And we can use the sword to get any kind of result that we want. But without the heart, no matter what we achieve, no matter what goals we actually end up with, without the heart of love and compassion and relationships and connection and all that, well, it's empty and meaningless at the end of that road. So from my perspective, we need to have this integration of the heart and the sword. The destination method is a result of that. And it came from as a consequence of my opening my own heart as much as I possibly. My whole life I've been moved in the direction, lived in the world of compassion. But what I longed for were tools. I was very lucky to not only study psychology in my undergraduate and graduate work, but I was also lucky to study very effective methods such as, for example, neurolinguistic programming, which is a brilliant cognitive group of tools, a whole lot of tools that NLP has produced to help people get the kinds of changes they want. What I notice is that NLP in and of itself is, like I say, a group of tools. And this tool chest doesn't have heart in and of itself. So when I was teaching NLP, I used to teach a lot of NLP around the world, as a matter of fact, I would always say we need to bring heart to it. What I noticed is that more than anything, heart was what was missing. Heart was then, and soul and spirit, spiritual things, needed to be brought into that field. And that's why I co-authored the book you mentioned, The Tools of the Spirit, Pathways to the Realization of Universal Innocence. Robert Dilts and I wrote that book a long time ago, and we've had it published all these years, and it's in popular in NLP circles. But it didn't change the field of NLP into a spiritually oriented field, because NLP is really a field that is based on tools. It's based on a reduction of the mind to behaviors. And it does a brilliant job of that. I'm very, very pleased with its brilliance, excited about what it's able to do. It's just that I wanted to go beyond that. So that meant the combination or the integration of heart, of compassion, and sword of technology. And that brought about the destination method, which I'm very happy about. I teach this now throughout the United States and also in Europe. And it's, of course, I'm online. Internet people know about it. We have lots of destination coaches here and in Europe. And it's very exciting to be able to move in this new way to really help resolve unnecessary human suffering.
And there's plenty of that, too much of that going on.
It's really true. There's so much unnecessary suffering. Now, the way that we think about it in the destination method is that there is necessary suffering. There really is necessary suffering, and then there really is unnecessary suffering. The necessary suffering is suffering that you and I and no human being knows any way to solve it. Just haven't got the faintest idea how to solve it. We're trying to solve it. We look into it as best we can, but we can't resolve this suffering. That's one element of necessary suffering. Another one is that no gift has been found as part of the suffering. So when it has no gift and we don't know what to do, we're going to suffer, and that's just the way it is. We can't stop it. It's necessary or required that we feel the suffering. However, there's a lot of unnecessary suffering now, and that means that we know how to solve it. In the past, we didn't know how to solve things like shock and trauma and grief and jealousy and allergies and things like that. Human beings didn't know how to solve those in the twinkling of an eye. Today, we do know how to solve those things. We have the technology to do that. And so we need to make sure that we apply ourselves to that so that we can have the unnecessary suffering made clear. Unnecessary suffering is we know what to do and we found the gift in the pain, the gift in the suffering. What we notice in the destination method is all suffering, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, all suffering offers us, doesn't force us to have, but offers us a gift. And that gift invariably includes compassion for others. Compassion, that means to put ourselves in the shoes of others. Compassion means to feel the suffering of others. It offers us compassion for the human condition. And this is a part of the gift. There are many gifts that suffering offers us, but by accepting this gift, recognizing the gift, and accepting the gift, and knowing how to solve the particular issue, whatever it might be, then that means that suffering is unnecessary, totally unnecessary. And the only reason that people have it is because they haven't chosen to or haven't discovered someone who can help them to solve that suffering. And there are many, many things that are now unnecessary suffering, a great deal more unnecessary suffering in the world than ever before, largely due to the brilliance of the tools that NLP has come up with, and also to the ways in which we utilize those tools and go beyond them with the destination method.
So I've had in the past some spiritual advice that suggested, when they say it's all good, there's a gift in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, this, to me, is wonderful advice.
Yeah.
It's nice information. Yes, there's value in it. And yet, without a pathway to be able to find the good, to find the value, especially when we're hurting, that advice just sounds hollow and empty.
It certainly does. And this, I believe, I really hear this, what you're saying. This is exactly right. The spiritual truth, in my estimation, the spiritual truth is all there is good. That's all there is. There's nothing else but God, and all of that is good. It's positive, and there's nothing else. That's a spiritual truth. However, we don't live all the time from that point of view or in that spiritual perspective. We have physical bodies, emotional experiences, and psychological or cognitive experiences. And when we try to think with our normal level of thinking about spiritual things, like all there is goodness, all there is God, we tend to end up in an argument. So how could it be that all there is God, if we have such terrible suffering in the world, such as our own suffering, or the suffering of so many millions, billions of people around the world, and we have things like wars, like the war we're currently involved in Iraq? How how could we possibly say that all there is good? So from a cognitive normal level of thinking, which is the psychological thinking, psychological level, the spiritual utterance, the spiritual truth that all there is good really makes no sense. It becomes totally nonsense. And that is a difference of levels of understanding. If we can allow ourselves to say, okay, perhaps all things are good, perhaps there is only good, but what about this suffering that's right in front of us? Can we do anything about that? Well, yes, we can. We can do a great deal more than we used to. In the physical world, of course, medicine has been able to do such wonderful, near miracles with people's bodies to help resolve certain kinds of suffering. We're very happy about that. Emotionally and psychologically, we can use the tools that the destination method provides to resolve things like shocking images, traumatic memories, internal conflict, grief at every level, compulsive behaviors, addictions, codependence. It's so wonderful what we can do. But even though we do all that, even though we resolve those kinds of issues, that doesn't necessarily lead us to the full realization of spirit, that all there is God, all there is good, all there is love. That doesn't necessarily lead us there. But for sure, if we don't intervene at those levels, we're less likely to come to the door of spirituality. One of the things I often say about tools, for example, cognitive tools, whether they are gestalt therapy or whether it's neurolinguistic programming or whatever kind of methodology a person might use, what I say is those things lead us to the door of spirituality, to the recognition, this intense, shocking realization that all there is God. This is very, very odd from the perspective of psychology. In fact, from the perspective of psychology and science, particularly scientism, materialism, it's nonsense. But from the point of view of someone who is living there or has touched that place, it is the absolute truth. So we're talking about different levels of reality. In the destination method, we talk about different levels of reality. We talk about the material level, which would be, if it was in a university, we'd be studying things like physics and we'd study chemistry. Physics and chemistry, material levels, these are real. And then, of course, there's another level beyond that, which is biological, having to do with that which is alive, as opposed to simple matter or chemicals, which are not alive. But the living level is at a different, totally different plane of existence. That which is alive is more than simply material. It's material plus life. And this is astounding. Then beyond that, of course, the psychological, which includes the physical and the biological, but is more than that, the ability to think and to know that I'm thinking. This is an astounding portion of reality, at evolutionary reality. Beyond that, we talk about the destination method, the level of soul, the bridge that connects the infinite with the finite. And beyond that, we talk about the level of spirit, which would be studying mysticism. At the level of soul, we'll study things like theology. The level of spirit, mysticism, the level of the mind would be psychology, and so on. So we talk about every single level in the destination method because we're interested in the resolution of suffering at each and every level. And we do that. We do that everywhere we are. My wife, Dr. Luzette McDonald, she's also a minister of the Church of Religious Science, she and I, we travel around the world and we teach people exactly how to resolve suffering at each of these levels.
Oh, wow. You just feel tingles of joy for the prospect of finally being able to not only resolve some immediate pain, because that's really important. It's a little hard to get the lion to lie down with the lamb when the lion's real hungry.
Exactly. Really. That's right. So we need to take care of that.
Yeah.
And make sure that that the suffering, the pain that people have, is resolved. It reminds me, recently I was working about 4 or 5 months ago, in 2007, I was working in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with a gentleman who had been in the Vietnam War 37 years ago, and he lost his legs there. They were blown off while he was in fighting the war in Vietnam. And for 37 years, he had this tremendous traumatic memory that was not resolved. it prevented him from having self-esteem and self-worth. He believed that he was a total failure. He was convinced that his life was a failure and he was a failure. Now, this is despite contrary facts. He was a father, a husband, a coach for women's baseball team. Without any legs, he did these amazing things, but he personally was convinced that he had no worth, no value, wasn't successful. And that was directly linked to the memories that were unresolved with regard to having his legs blown off in Vietnam in 1970. Well, he came to me in a seminar and asked me to help him with that, and I was so happy that he wanted that destination. The destination method acts, we act like taxi drivers. We say, what is it that you want? Where do you want to go? What destination do you have in mind? And he told me what he wanted. He wanted to be free of all the... He had a lot of guilt and shame. He had guilt and shame. Hard to believe it. But he had guilt and shame because his legs were blown off there and he left his friends behind. Well, I worked with him and transformed that, completely resolved, 100% resolved, the trauma that he had from that terrible incident that happened back in those days. So he no longer had guilt, no longer had shame. At the end of it, he talked about being... actually quite successful and feeling really good about himself. And then we did another piece of work, which was to resolve his phantom limb pain. He had phantom limb pain. He had pain in the feet that he didn't actually have. His feet were gone many years ago, but he had pain and could not sleep every night. He couldn't sleep at all without taking massive medication. And then he only slept for 2 hours at a time because he was linked up to having to wake up every 2 hours to go on guard duty in Vietnam. Well, that was 37 years ago. So what I did with him is I worked with him to resolve this phantom pain, resolve this sense that he was still in Vietnam. And after we did these two pieces of work, one about the guilt and shame and one about the phantom pain, he has totally resolved about that, completely over, feels safe and good about himself, feels successful internally, and he now is able to come to that door we talked about a moment ago, to get past the psychological, to open to the possibility that all there is God, all there is goodness. This makes no sense. That idea makes no sense to anyone who's in the midst of suffering the way he was suffering. How could he open himself to that? Well, he needed to find a way to resolve that deep suffering, and we did it together. He and I worked on that. And I'm happy to say that I videotaped that. I had that professionally videotaped. It was in a seminar, and we have it on DVD, so that it's, instead of it just being a DVD, it's an actual training. It teaches people who watch that DVD precisely how I did that work with resolving trauma on the one hand, and the other DVD has to do with resolving the phantom limb pain. And I'm so happy about that and proud of it because it's a specific example of what's possible, and got done right there. And he's a wonderful man. Every time I go to, we teach a lot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I always enjoy seeing him when he comes to our seminars because we teach out there quite a lot. It's great to see him. But this is an example that I just gave you.
Sure. Now, this process, Dr. McDonald, can I get an idea about how long it was?
Yes, the trauma resolution process, which is my adaptation of fundamentally what it started out as a NLP trauma resolution process, I added to it aspects that involve meaning and purpose and spiritual perspective. And in any case, when I worked with him, it took approximately 1 hour, maybe a little less than 1 hour, to resolve that trauma that he had for 37 years. Then the other work that I did...
Oh, it took a whole hour?
You got a point there. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, and it's done. And he's, by the way, he's very open. He talks about it with everybody. He's really a wonderful man. I'm just so happy that I'm honored to know him. I was in the Army during the same time he was. I was in the Army during the Vietnam War from 1966 to 1969. And so since I'm a veteran of that, I was honored to be able to help somebody who went in country, went to Vietnam, and was seriously harmed there. And now he's doing great, so I'm very happy about that. The other work we did, which was the resolution of the phantom limb pain, that took approximately 20 minutes, and it's done. And he had that the whole time.
Hmm.
And it's on DVD, but we are really really happy with this. It's one of the things that we've been, I've been so busy, you know, creating and teaching around the world that I have done very little with regard to documenting through DVDs and CDs and so on. But this time, now we have about seven. We have seven DVDs.
Okay.
I'm
now,
really
this might be a good time to share your website and information, because that's I must have that.
Well, we're really
and I'm
happy.
Not the only one.
Well, people can email me, and if they're interested in buying these, they can email me at robert@teloscenter.com. Telos is spelled T-E-L-O-S, like Sam, T-E-L-O-S, center.com, robert@teloscenter.com. They can email me and then tell me what they might be interested in. I could send them a list of the seven DVDs. They can look online at our website, and we'll have them listed there, although they can't purchase them online, but they have to actually contact me either by telephone or by email. My telephone number is 714-577-5717. That's 714-577-5717 to the Telos Healing Center here in California. The seven DVDs that we have, they're $75 each. And if they want to, we can explain all about them on the phone or an email. But they're things like resolving self-criticism. We do a complete DVD of how to resolve self-criticism, where I take somebody through a process such that they've resolved their self-criticism. Also, the phantom pain resolution, that's available. And then there's a not only the resolving trauma process that I did with him, I have a different resolving process. It's a childhood trauma. I work with a man. When he was 2.5 years old, his mother would, from time to time, well, she beat him from the time he was 2.5 till he was 9, and she would beat him so viciously that his legs would bleed into his socks, and it was just horrific for him. And in this particular DVD, I go over the five levels of trauma, and it's a basic step-by-step traumatic trauma process that people can watch and learn. Also, there's the belief re-imprint process, where I teach people how to change limiting beliefs of any sort whatsoever. There's also a compulsion resolution or compulsion blowout DVD. We help people. I work with a woman who is compelled, could not pass up a pecan pie. She
okay.
had to eat pecan pie, wherever it was, and any other sweets for that matter. And she had been compelled her entire life. And when she came to me, she was very, very upset about all that. And in a workshop I created called Freedom from Addiction, in this workshop in Louisiana, she came and said she really wanted to no longer be compelled to eat pecan pie. And we worked for approximately 10 minutes. And after that, she no longer has any compulsion whatsoever to eat. She hasn't had a pecan pie. She went through Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that. No pecan pie, isn't in the slightest interested in that, nor is she interested in other sweets, and she's lost a lot of weight. So we're really happy with that particular DVD. And then the final one is resolving blocks to weight loss, which was a person. I worked with a woman who was struggling with her weight. The other woman just wanted to solve the compulsion, but it affected her weight. This person really wanted to lose weight, and she had a lot of negative thinking that was stopping her from doing that. So the final DVD of the seven DVDs is that one. And people can, you know, people can contact me, call me up, ask me about it, or email me, and I'll happily send them information or send them the DVD along with, and information about the CDs we have, because we have recordings of my work where people can sit down and just listen and get changed. So we have a lot of product like that, as well as the couple of books that you mentioned at the beginning of the program.
Ah, okay. Wow, this is excellent. I want to see if I'm hearing you correctly, because this is astounding. Can get that. Was that one called the trauma release?
We have two about trauma.
A couple
trauma.
Of those.
We have
okay.
one, resolving childhood trauma.
Okay.
Now, the one I did with the man whose legs were blown off is just resolving trauma process, where I utilize advanced language while I'm doing advanced language methods, so that these are not just DVDs. I mean, people say, well, why would I spend $75 on a DVD when I can buy a movie for $20? Well, this is not a movie. This is a training. These are not DVDs. They're trainings. When people get these, what happens is they can sit down and watch me work over and over again until they can understand what I'm doing and they can also go along for the ride in case they have to have some kind of issue, a traumatic issue. They can go along for the ride when I take this gentleman through the process. They can set it up themselves and work as though I'm talking to them. So
So that's one of the things that I wanted to make sure I heard correctly. So it wasn't, a person could at one level watch to see how you're doing it, which would be, interesting if they wanted to learn the process. As secondarily, for the average person out there, they can, by participating, and maybe you can explain that a little bit more, along with it, can actually receive relief.
It's quite possible that when watching me work with this gentleman, for example, on his trauma when in Vietnam, that they could think about their own particular issue that they have in their life. Let's say it's something in the past where they were harmed as a child, for example. They could listen, watch the DVD one time, get the general idea of what it is I'm doing, and then plug into their own past issue and do the kinds of things that I'm asking him to do. So that it is possible. It's a little awkward to do that because I'm not talking to them personally, but they nonetheless could get that idea. And in any case, they were, in watching this work, it's deeply moving, deeply healing just to watch this man have the resolution of his suffering. And it's true of each person that I work with on these seven DVDs. So we have this available for those people who are quite serious about their own personal change.
Oh, okay. Wow. Now, it makes me a little curious. I don't know for sure yet, but let's say someone is watching or orders the DVD. I don't know if there's a bit of a or something that might be created, if it would be helpful to have a little booklet that goes along with it that says, okay, well, if you've got some issues, one, just watch it through just to see what's going on. Now watch it again, but this time a little bit of a booklet with some coaching on how to make it easier for someone to gain that value. Or is it just so simple they just can sit and watch it a few times and it happens automatically?
No, with many people that does happen. In teaching seminars around the world, many times people will come up to me. For example, Monday night, I was teaching a seminar in Laguna Beach, California, and while I was working with somebody up front, somebody in the back of the room had a complete resolution of their issue. they went along with it, right?
That's wonderful.
This is not uncommon. It happens in Holland, even when I'm being translated into Dutch. People are watching me work with one person, and then they sit there and they think, well, I think I'll go along with that. In fact, I was in St. Louis last November, and I was working with a woman who was struggling about eating, I think it was chocolate that she couldn't stop eating. And I was working with her, and my brother-in-law was in the audience, and I didn't know he was going along for the ride. He was just listening to what I was doing with her, and he tried it out. In fact, he told me later on, he tried out, I worked with half a dozen people there, and everything that I did with people that he was watching me do, he just decided he would try it on himself. He just said, well, what if that were me? Put himself in the shoes of the client I was working with. And lo and behold, he no longer eats sweets. He flew out here to California saying, I don't eat sweets. I'm not the least interested. And his whole life he's been interested in sweets. So it was really a joy to have that happen, and he just went along for the ride. So that can happen. And then, of course, if people do email me or they want me to send them the DVD, if they write me a little email saying, look, send me a little coaching along with it so I can watch and also make some changes, I'll happily include that. There's no problem.
Okay. All right. Well, it's one, just nice to know that that through some repeat watching of it, that at different times some people are just going to end up going, like you say, along on the ride and getting that and getting some wonderful things happening for themselves. And it makes me curious because in spiritual talks that I've been to, they say, okay, there's only God. There's only one of us here. We are all always interconnected. And I'm just wondering if that relates to why some of your work would be able to support someone who's not going through the process directly, but indirectly.
Well, that would be one way to think about it. The way that I think about it is that there's different levels here. When we talk about all there is God, there's only one of us here, that's it, then clearly there cannot be any interconnection, because interconnectedness means that there's other when there's only one. And so
okay. We're
talking about dualistic structures when we say interconnectedness. Well, there's one thing and then there's another thing. But in fact, there's only one, and there's no opposite, and there can only be one, because that one is infinite, and there can't be two infinites. Two infinites can't possibly exist, because they would limit each other and become less than infinite each. So when we speak at the level of with spiritual language, when we talk the way you're speaking now, very deep, and it's a high-level understanding that all there is one, that's different than talking at the psychological level, which must work at the level of duality. The psychological level has to work by means of duality. There's a left and a right and an up and a down and a back and a forth. And there's a male and there's female. There's all these, there's peace and then there's the absence of peace in the dualistic psychological world. So the reason why it's possible to go for the ride on one of these processes and really make a change is because the person who's listening puts themselves in the shoes of the client, and their mind gets changed. This is the foundation of how the destination method works from a psychological level. The mind has been defined by the destination method. We define it. We are absolutely certain that the brain and the mind are not the same thing. This is, of course, from a scientific point of view, this is anathema. People in science don't like this at all. They want to say that it's only physical. It's only the brain. But the truth of the matter is that we can point to the brain. That's quite clear. But we can't point to the mind, because the mind is non-local. But the mind is made of pictures and sounds and feelings and tastes and smells. And those internal representations, pictures and sounds, for example, have opposites. There's a picture can be close up or far away. It could be on the left side or the right side. So our minds are made of these internal representations or pictures and sounds and feelings and tastes and smells. And when we change our mind, we're really changing our representations. And these representations, when they're changed, change our emotional life. So that when somebody watches me working with someone, working with a traumatic memory, for instance, or internal conflict, if the person who's watching puts themselves in the shoes of the client and actually can notice their own mind is changing, that the picture that used to bother them was up close and now it's far away, they have a change. Their emotional life is changed because their mental life is changed. The mind creates emotions. Pictures and sounds create our emotional life. It is when we change our minds, we change our lives. We change our change the mind, change your life. Change your mind, change your emotions. So the central, I'm glad we're talking about this, because the central problem that I see in universities today and in the world in general is the absence of a definition of the mind. You know, isn't it funny, Kent, that we can go to a university and find clear definitions of things that are physical, agreed upon definitions.
Right.
Everybody agrees about physical dimension. We say, well, gravity, you know, functions. Nobody argues about the law of gravity. This is not an arguable thing. People who disagree with it are regarded as silly. They say, well, gravity, if you drop an object, it will fall, and it will fall down toward the Earth at 32 feet per second per second. And everybody agrees to that. Well, when it comes to the mind, if we go into the psychology department, there's no agreement as to what the mind is. And I believe, maybe I'm silly, but I believe that this is central, the central problem of why we haven't been able to solve massive social problems, for example, in education, in personal relationships, because when psychologists get together, they don't agree as to what the mind is. They agree about the brain. They know where the brain is and how much it weighs and the different parts of the brain and even some of the functions of the brain and the neurological structure. But they don't know what the mind is, and some of them actually believe there's no such thing as the mind. Well, what we do in the destination method, we say, yes, there is the mind, and the mind is clearly defined as being made of representations, pictures, sounds, feelings, tastes, and smells. And when we change those maps, we change our maps of reality, we change our emotional life. And this, if we could get this in the culture, that the mind does have a useful definition, I believe we could help so many more people all over the nation and all over the world. We could then say to people, listen, we know that the mind creates things like, for example, allergies. Allergies, well, I've worked with countless people who've had allergies to different substances and helped them to change their mind, their representation of the allergy, and suddenly the physical allergy is gone. Well, isn't that a wonder? Isn't that great? And, you know, those things that are not perfect or not perfected in the kind of work that we do, it's only because we hadn't had the time yet to get them better and better. What we need is not only time, but an agreement as to what the mind is. So in the Destination Method, we are convinced of a number of things. One of the things we're convinced is that the mind exists and it's not the brain. So the mind includes the brain, but isn't the brain. It's more than the brain. And we believe very sincerely that when we change the mind, we change emotional life. All emotions come as a consequence of our minds. And our minds are made of pictures. So we change our pictures and our sounds, we'll change our emotional life. And if we change our emotional life, guess what, Kenneth? We change the chemicals that are produced in our body. So it's very exciting to me when I think about what's possible, what's really possible that we can do if we just come to an agreed-upon definition. Now, if we don't come to an agreed-upon definition of the mind, well, that's all right. I happen to notice what the definition of the mind is, and it helps me, helps my wife, helps all the coaches that I teach around the world to do brilliant, compassionate work with people. So that's what I'm committed. That's my mission and vision and purpose. I'm committed to do this in the world, whether or not I have agreement from the psychological and the biological and the scientific materialism levels. Even without that agreement, I'm still committed to helping people resolve their unnecessary suffering.
Ah, okay. So we're going to set aside the diagnosis and agree, and whether we get agreement on diagnosis and go to results.
Yeah.
How is someone's life working?
Exactly. Exactly so. You know, people come to me and I'll say, so what do you want? And they start giving me somebody else's diagnosis. They say, you know, I was told I have ADD or ADHD or whatever, and I don't care about those kinds of labels. I'm interested in, does the person have what they want? Can they do what they want? And if they can't think in the way they want to think, then my question is, what's stopping them in some way that they're thinking? And my job is to assist them in getting what they want. I'm like a taxi driver. They get into my taxi, I say to them, where do you want to go? If they don't know where they want to go, we just sit there. But if they know where they want to go, I take them there. They don't have to know how to get there. You know, I live in California, about, maybe 50 miles from Hollywood. If somebody gets into a taxi here and says, take me to Hollywood, the taxi driver doesn't ask the advice of the passenger as to how to get there. The taxi driver is being paid to know how to get there. Well, that's what we do in the Destination Method. I'm like a taxi driver who knows how to get to destinations, but I await the destination of the passenger. The passenger tells me, I want to go here, I want this in my life, I want to change that. And when I find out what it is, what the person wants, then I actually get them there. That's the Destination Method, which is founded, by the way, your listeners might be interested in, the three golden questions.
Oh.
Yeah, they're fabulous questions, and I would recommend they write them down and utilize them for themselves and for everybody else, because I tell you...
All right, get ready, everybody, to write this down.
If you're actually able to think along these lines, when people are able to think along the lines of these questions, they really are able to help somebody. And that first question is, what do you want? What a powerful question that is. It's not, what do you kind of want? What do you actually want? There are many ways to ask that question, but it boils down to, very directly, you want something, what is it? It's not what you don't want. Most people end up saying, well, I don't want to be unhappy or something like that. Well, that's not telling me what they want, it's telling me what they don't want. So the first question is, what do you want? And it's a powerful question. The second question is, how will you know when you have what you want? And my goodness, that's really important. It says, what will be the evidence that you'll have that you've got what you want? So somebody says, there's a passenger in your taxi, Robert, I want to go to Hollywood. And I'll say, great, I'll take you there. But the question is, how will you know when you're in Hollywood? And people will, if they don't know how they're going to know that they're in Hollywood, then if I get them there, they may get on the taxi and say, that's not where I wanted to go. So I ask them, how will you know when you're actually in Hollywood? When the person says, well, when I get out of the taxi and I see the corner of Sunset and Vine, then I know right up this corner I'm in Hollywood. I say,
yes.
I'll take you right there. And then I take them there. And the third question is, what stops you from having what you want? What stops you from getting from here to Hollywood and Vine? The answer is, typically, I don't know how to do it. I just don't know how. Or there's some internal belief that's changed stopping the person. So part of my job is to find out what's stopping them and then correct that so that it's no longer stopping them and take them to the destination. This is the metaphor. The destination method is the taxi driver metaphor.
Wow. Wow, that's excellent. You call them the three golden questions?
Three golden questions. What do you want? How will you know when you have it? And what stops you from having it right now? My goodness, you know, if people who are in the business of helping, like psychotherapists and social workers, and they only know these three questions, they'll be way ahead of most people if they just stay on those questions, just stay in a solution-oriented question structure, solution-focused. What do you want? How will you know when you have what you want? What stops you from having what you want? These are just wonderful three and only three questions that go such a long way to helping the average person or anybody, to actually make changes in their lives and get what it is they want. It clarifies for the person a great deal, gets rid of things that are unnecessary to think about, and goes right to the point.
Yeah. Wow, that's excellent. And you were making, to me, some statements that were, like, so breakthrough in terms of the idea of change your mind, change your thinking, and then change your feelings. If you ask most people to think of whatever, think of a tree, a house, picture their refrigerator, they can very easily change pictures in their mind and see many different things.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask them to make a bunch of different sounds, imagine a dog barking, a cat meowing, a cow, you know, or a bell ringing. People can change those components and hear different sounds. And yet, you know, someone just says, you know, well, this is how I feel, as though it was cemented in stone.
Yes, exactly. You're right. That's exactly right, and I'm glad you're bringing that up. On Monday night when I was working in Laguna Beach, a woman spoke to me. She said she wanted very much to resolve the issue that she had. And I said, well, what exactly is that? What do you want? She said that she wanted to have a relationship. And I said, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not an organization that finds people. I don't have anybody in mind, no telephone numbers. What exactly do you want? And she said that her husband had died 16 years before. He died of cancer. She was with him. And when he died, it was very painful, very difficult for her to be with him as he died. And when he passed away, she lost the love of her life. And it was just devastating to her heart. She had a deep, broken heart. Out of that, she developed great fear of being in a relationship. So here she was, wanting to be in a relationship, a new relationship that would be loving and kind. But she was afraid that the same thing would happen, that she would be hurt, that she would have a broken heart again. And it was very, so frightening to her that she wasn't allowing herself to open to the possibility of having a fabulous love life. So for 16 years, she'd held herself back. Do you understand what I'm saying, Ken? It was so difficult for her. She was so upset. And she wanted to be able to get past her fear. Well, the first thing I pointed out to her was just to let her know that anything that begins ends. Now, notice this is the beginning of a spiritual discussion. I said, all things that are born die. That can't be stopped. And if you love, your heart will be broken. The only way to make sure your heart's not broken is to never love. But notice that going through a life without loving makes the life very much not so much worthwhile in living. That what's needed is to accept that fully loving means to love means to be open and fully participate in the face of change and impermanence and death. And that is love, to fully participate in the face of change, impermanence, and death, to go right to the ends of it, to go, yes, I completely open to this, knowing that my heart will be broken. It's true in my life with my wife, Luzette. She and I have been married quite a while. We love each other. would be devastating to me if she were to die. Well, the truth of the matter is that one day, one of us will die, probably first, and the other one will have a broken heart. And so there's no way to avoid that. The question is, do I want to live a life without love, or do I want to live a life with love, knowing that my heart will be broken, and that there's meaning to the brokenness, which is the fulfillment of this love, of living in a life that has love in it.
Mm.
So when I mentioned that to her, she said, I understand. I said, well, do you want to change now to be able to have what you want, which is to open your heart again? She said, yes. Well, when she sat down in front of me, I asked her to let me know where in her body she felt the feeling of fear when she thought about being involved with someone, you know, being really open again. And she
Robert, I'm wondering, please excuse the interruption. I don't know if you would be willing to be a guest on another program. Our time has just flown by, and I feel like, you know, okay, you know, and this is, of course, on TV, the perfect time to, you know, okay, now for a commercial. Now tune in for the next when, yes, Dr. McDonald will talk more about how this woman whose heart was broken is now feeling better and ready to and loving again.
That's true.
And if you'd be willing to come on again and share some more, I would love to pick up from here and go into more depth.
I'd be happy, Ken. Kenneth, I think your program is fabulous, wonderful. When I heard your opening remarks, I said, I'm at home. This feels fabulous, and I'm very happy to do this again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, we will schedule it and put it on our website, and also want to invite people to be sure to call you, 714-577-5717, or email you, Robert, at telos center.com,
yes,
or visit your website, telocenter.com.
Yes.
And just wish you a wonderful week. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to share so much, and we'll look forward to part two.
That's a deal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. I deeply appreciate it, Ken.
You're welcome. God bless you and my listeners. God bless you. And until we meet again, be well and goodbye for now. Let go and let God. Let go.